Talk Radio 570 KVI.
804 here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Kirby in for John today. He'll be back tomorrow, though I think I'm back on Friday. I have a look at my schedule. I'm back several days because Sean has a lot of vacation to take before he goes on, before the end of the year, so I'll be in. And I thank John for that opportunity and management as well. We hear a lot about the fiscal cliff. We hear a lot about this confrontation in Washington. What does it really all mean, and is there a way out? Dr. Peter Morici is a professor of economics at the University of Maryland. John has had him on several times. He joins us now to talk about this fiscal cliff. And, Professor, thank you so much for being with us today.
Nice to be with you.
Professor, the fiscal cliff coming up January 1, the taxes go up, spending cuts come in if some deal is not cut and made. Your thoughts on the chances of us going off the cliff?
I think they'll probably come up with something because I don't think the Republicans want to be in a position of letting the president blame them for taxes going up on everybody. I think he'll be able to manipulate the situation such that that would be the case. Whether that's justified or not is right. Irrelevant. What's relevant to Republicans is that he can do it. Now, that in mind, what I expect is some kind of deal where he gets higher taxes on wealthier people, either by scaling back on the credits and deductions they may take advantage, or by raising the rates. He's going to get one or the other. And there's going to be some cuts, some changes in the eligibility of entitlements or premiums charged for Medicare or what have you that will accomplish some savings. In combination, you know, maybe a couple hundred billion dollars because the president also wants to spend some more money, and he'll likely get that. So where does that leave us? Well, we have a budget deficit that's at least $1 trillion, perhaps even more this year, and so it takes it down to, say, $850 billion. If we look at the pace at which entitlements are growing, none of the stuff that's being proposed by the Republicans right now would slow the rate of growth.
Right.
Then I think we're looking at deficits of over $1 trillion for the rest of the decade, and maybe even getting up to a couple of trillion. I don't know if we'll get that high, but that's enough to really rock the system. At some point, bond buyers simply won't want to buy U.S. Treasuries, and the Fed will have to monetize the debt by printing money and buying the debt, and that's not going to be a good thing.
That should lead to inflation.
Yeah, I would think so.
I've got to tell you, I know a little bit about economics. I studied some in school, and I've read Friedman and Smith and Tom Sowell and some other economists. And it strikes me that what's really keeping this whole thing together is the Feds are keeping interest rates at zero levels, in essence, when traditionally they're in the 3, 4, 5, 6 range. And if something happens, so interest rates go up to where they should be, we're dead. I mean, the interest on our debt will grow so significantly, there'll be no money left over for anything except paying off the debt. Isn't that right?
Well, it depends on how high they go. We've got to remember, a lot of the debt's still at old interest rates. You know, a 30-year bond issued in 2005 is paying a higher interest
rate.
Right,
right.
So, I mean, there's a lot of legacy here. But we are facing, some difficulties. It's troublesome.
Now, there was a suggestion made by some over the weekend that right now the president holds most of the cards, and the Republicans, like you say, will probably have to concede just so they're not blamed for raising taxes. But there was a suggestion made that what the Republicans should do is perhaps pass Simpson-Bowles in the House, which was the commission the president put together to deal with the debt and came up with some rather controversial issues and suggestions, but that overall it might be better than what the president's suggesting. Your thoughts?
You can't just pass Simpson-Bowles because Simpson-Bowles has options in it. You could do A or you could do B, a little bit of a Chinese menu, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't looked at it lately. You kind of hit me off guard with that.
I didn't mean to do that, but I understand.
You know, don't have it suspended in my head.
Right.
But as I recall, there are options in it. So, And the other thing is a lot of that stuff is unacceptable to Democrats.
Right.
Just as some of the stuff in Simpson-Bowles should be unacceptable to Republicans. For example, in creating a new Social Security entitlement for people in high-stress jobs, They could retire earlier even though you're lifting the retirement age.
Right.
You're not going to get anything out of that because what's going to happen is everybody's going to be in a high-stress job all of a sudden. They'll just get themselves reclassified. You know, a physically stressful job.
Right.
But in any case, suppose you could pass it. I don't think you'd get it through the Senate, but that would be interesting in that it would then throw it in the lap of the Republicans, that they would then have to deal with it, and they would have to then negotiate. That might work, but time is growing short for that sort of thing, because you'd have to get the caucus together and agree on the Chinese menu just from the point of view of the Republican caucus, and I doubt that there would be unanimity of voices, as there never is. And so I don't know that that's going to be an option much longer.
Right. Well, my thought was that, and the thought behind it is, this was the president's own commission, came up with something he apparently didn't like, and so he shelved it. And it gives the Republicans perhaps a bit more of the high ground in saying, well, Mr. President, this is your own commission. And it does raise tax revenue through ending certain deductions, and it does flatten the tax system, though. It does make it more simple. It cuts corporate tax rate, and then it does make some entitlement reform, and it's your commission. And it might be a way for the Republicans to regain a bit of the momentum, which seems to be all with the president right now.
I think that you have to remember the president promised not to raise taxes on middle-class families, and that and Simpson-Bowles would do that, and I think he would find a way to turn that rhetorically. The only way the Republicans are going to get the initiative back is if they point out to the president a couple of hard facts. One is that it is awfully not very hard to get elected on a platform of taxing 3% of the population when 47% of the population doesn't pay any taxes.
Right.
And it's more than just people, and Romney let him get away here, that are, you know, that are serving in the Gulf. Let's get real here. And you need a little bit of a pit bull to do this. And that, you know, the president may have won his election, but if I were Boehner, I'd say, you know, I won my election too. I got a majority in the House. And the Constitution says revenue begins with me. And we promised our constituents that we wouldn't raise taxes. So where does that leave us? It leaves us that we have to compromise. And you seem to be in no mood to compromise. In fact, you're not even here in Washington to compromise. Every time I turn the TV set on, Mr. President, you are on TV. You are making a speech someplace trying to rouse public support as if we're still in the campaign. It is time to stop campaigning. It is time to stop electioneering. And it's time to start governing. Are you prepared to be President of the United States? If so, I'm serving lemonade tomorrow afternoon at 2:00 in the Speaker's residence. And you're welcome to join me for one-on-one budget negotiations. Or do you want to keep on campaigning? This is not a game, Mr. President. And I'd hammer the crap out of him. Much as, say, you know, Tip O'Neill might have done, or Newt Gingrich.
I vote for you.
I wouldn't have used the word crap, but I would have hammered him that way. But the point is that he's behaving like a selfish child that wants it all his way. He didn't win 60 seats in the Senate, and he didn't win a majority in the House, so he's not entitled to that.
Right. But he's anybody campaigns.
We have divided government for a reason.
That's right. Although he's campaigning as if he did, and I think the Republicans are fearful that, you know, he'll be able to beat him over the head with this, but at the same time,
they're letting him do it.
They got reelected, and they have a vested interest for the nation. It's not just about the next election. It's about the nation, and some people forget that.
All those things could be raised, but they're not doing it.
Right.
Instead, they're letting the guy run around the country on the people's money, you know, campaigning. And also, I think someone has to sooner or later say it is no way to run a democracy to get 51% of the population to agree to tax the other 49.
Yeah, no,
That's not what democracy is about. If your 51% are willing to pay more taxes, then my 49 should be willing to pay more taxes too. But this is like two wolves sitting down with a lamb to vote on what's for dinner. And, you know, afterwards, the two wolves will be very happy to say it was all just and noble, and the lamb won't be around to object.
That's right. That's right. Dr. Peter Morici is with the University of Maryland, an economist. By the way, he has a Twitter feed at P. Morici, M-O-R-I-C-I, at P. Morici 1, the number 1, not the word 1, number 1, at P. Morici 1. Professor, could you hang around for a couple more minutes? I have one more thing I do want to talk to you about besides this. The report this morning on the manufacturing contraction, which was not expected in November, and how that might impact things as well. Sign for the future. Could I ask you to do that?
Yeah, sure.
Great. Okay, thanks. So we're going to take a very short break here. We're with Dr. Peter Morici, the University of Maryland, and we're going to be back. Manufacturing contracted this morning. It wasn't expected to. What could this mean for the economy down the road? We'll be right back with him and more. It's 8:13 on KVI. Talking with Dr. Peter Morici, a professor of economics at the University of Maryland. His Twitter feed is at PMorici1, at PMORICI1, the number one, at PMorici1. or at PMRC1. I've asked him to, if he could hang on for a couple minutes, and Professor, thanks so much for doing that. There was a report came across this morning that the manufacturing sector of the United States fell into contraction last month, that some had estimated it would fall, but it fell further than some thought. This is only one-month thing, and it may not show a trend, but your interpretation of what this means?
Well, there's been a lot of signs of weakness in the economy. The recent GDP number, you know, 2.8%, a lot of that was inventory build and exports. And you can't just build up inventories. Eventually, you've got to sell the stuff.
Right.
And we don't expect exports to remain strong as they have been because of what's going on in Europe. The important thing in that report was that consumer spending has been slowing and continues to slow, according to the retail sales reports we're getting. So what we're seeing here is manufacturing is starting to trim back a bit in anticipation that that demand is not going to be there. And so going into the new year, we're likely going to see a weak first quarter and overall probably continue to grow at about 2%.
Now, if this happened in July, would there be a difference in an April or July number and a November number, given that the holiday season is coming?
We seasonally adjust the numbers.
Oh, you see? Okay, all right.
No, so I wouldn't put too much.
Because I would think this would be the time of year people are spending more on Christmas presents and that kind of thing. But if it's seasonal,
also, where do we get all our Christmas presents from these days?
Well, not necessarily China, from
right,
American factories. That's right.
Right. I mean, American factories don't make Christmas presents.
Yeah, they make other things like airplanes.
Right. Yeah.
One last quick question.
You're really hard pressed to find something that plugs in that you can sell in a Made in America store.
I have a sister whose crusade is to buy nothing that is not made in America for Christmas.
Well, she better not have her coffee maker
for it. And it's really hard for her. I mean, it's hard for her to find anything, lower price stuff and daily use stuff and Christmas presents that isn't made somewhere else. It's really hard. So
that's right. It is. It is.
One last quick question. We'll let you go. If I were to make you economic czar of this country and say you could have three things to help straighten this out, and what you say will happen, the policies that Professor Morisi comes up with will happen, three things, what would they be?
Well, I would straighten our trading relationship with China. If necessary, I'd put a tax on the conversion of U.S. dollars into the Chinese yuan to force that.
Okay.
That would force them to stop manipulating their currency.
Okay.
I would develop offshore oil and gas. And on the North Slope of Alaska, that would cut our oil imports in half without much of a problem. Those two things together would give us about 5 million jobs. And I would roll back spending roll back spending to 2007 levels, adjusted for inflation, because we've had a lot of additions to these entitlement programs. And I would get involved in some long-term genuine entitlement reform.
Okay. Because oil and gas, those are good paying jobs, and that development would create jobs as well as...
In the United States.
In the United States.
They use
right.
an oil field
that's
right here.
And provide revenue, because don't they pay leases and fees on the land where they go to drill and the feds open
yeah,
it up?
Yeah, but more than that, just the additional GDP is going to create all kinds of income
right.
taxes.
Well, Marco Rubio, you said it, not more taxes, more taxpayers. I think that's one way out of it. Put people
yeah,
back
but he
work.
Doesn't want to run for national office,
we'll see. I will see. That's kind of a...
But I don't blame him for not wanting to run with Romney. It would be very hard for it would have been very hard for an Hispanic
absolutely.
To run with Romney.
I agree.
And that's one of the reasons that Romney lost the election. If Republicans want to prevail in the future, they're going to have to figure out a way to do something about their primary system, because whoever they nominate is neither... running as chief immigration officer, nor are they running for president of the National Rifle.
Well, they need someone who can just explain the message in a way that relates to people on the street and why it makes a difference.
Well, that would help, too. But they pissed off so many Hispanics. Cannot win. You're a state chairman. You know darn
right.
well a Republican cannot win the presidency without 35 to 40% of the Hispanic vote, the way places like Colorado break down.
I agree.
And Romney got 28%, and he was lucky to get that.
I know, I agree.
You can't say you're going to send all those people here that were brought as 2 and 4 year olds back at age 18.
Right.
We messed up that message.
And we haven't. I know how to fix it, but nobody listens to me because I'm in Washington. But I know how to fix it. I know what you need to talk about. But I do believe generally, I'm kind of a Kemp kind of guy, The message of prosperity and wealth creation and opportunity the American dream can apply to everyone. We need someone who can articulate that vision, and we need to stop talking about stupid stuff like deporting people. And it'd be wondrous what we could do with that. But I've been in the party for a long time. I'm not going to hold my breath.
I agree with you.
All right. Peter Morici, professor of economics, University of Maryland. Again, at Twitter, PMorici1. Professor, thank you so much. Hope we get a chance to talk again sometime.
We'll see you. Take care.
You bet. Have a great day.